be happy. In every life we have some trouble, but when you worry you make it double, don't worry.
Hello, this is Gail Moskowitz, and thank you for listening to Mental Health Matters. On today's show, we're going to discuss helping couples to maintain connection emotionally and physically. As you know, Mental Health Matters is a program dedicated to issues pertaining to mental health, interpersonal relations, addiction, sex and sexuality, and discussing healthy ways in which to live a more thoughtful and emotionally honest and fulfilling life. Each week, we highlight an issue, discuss it, after which you, the audience, have an opportunity to ask questions or weigh in on the subject. The number at which you to reach us today is 649-9737. Mental Health Matters comes to you every Monday, 1 p.m. on WRIR, 97.3 FM on your radio dial. But you can also listen to the program in real time by logging on to WRIR's website, www.wrir.org. The show will be available for you to listen to by this evening, along with all the past shows, by logging on to my website, mentalhealthmatters.web.officelive.com. But if you simply go into the website and click on my program, it'll get you into my website, and it'll give you all the information you need. And I'm also happy to send you a link to my site if you email me at yourmentalhealthmatters@gmail.com. That's one word, the letters U-R, mentalhealthmatters@gmail.com. Feel free to send me your comments, questions, or suggestions for a future show. As I stated, today's show will highlight the topic of helping couples to maintain connection emotionally and physically. It is easy, as you all know, to fall in love. Love feels great, at least for a while. But it's not easy to stay in love. At least it is not easy to maintain those amazing feelings we have that we identify as being in love. I cannot tell you how often a client will come to therapy with me wondering if they should separate or divorce, and their chief complaint is, I love my spouse, I just am not in love with them anymore. While we think this should be easy, it actually is a complicated subject. We humans have to learn everything. Instinct only does not dictate a satisfactory life for us human beings. We have to be coached, we need wisdom, and this afternoon, our guest, Karen Olshansky, licensed clinical social worker and certified Imago therapist, hopefully will impart some wisdom to us on this topic. Welcome to the Mental Health Matters, Karen. I am thrilled that you are here. For those of you who would like to call today, the number is 649-9737. 649-9737. Welcome to Mental Health Matters.
Thanks, Gail. It's a pleasure to be here.
So, you know what? I like the title we chose for the show. I originally had titled the show Helping Couples to Regain Connection Emotionally and Physically. And you wanted me to change it to maintain connection. So why the distinction?
Gail, I think it's an important distinction because I would love everyone to know when they first fall in love and when they get married. I'd actually like to teach this in high school, that the romantic stage of love, as you alluded to before, does not last forever. It's a stage. Pat Love, who wrote the book Hot Monogamy, said that we usually get about 2 to 3 years in romantic love, and that's enough for us to meet, mate, and procreate. And after that, romantic love wears off, and we have to actually put some intention into our relationships and some effort into our relationships to maintain that connection, the emotional connection, the physical connection, and the intimacy, and the romance, too.
So, you know, we're going to talk today about this body of work you just spoke about, mm-hmm. this woman named Pat Love, and she's written this book called Hot Monogamy, and she's written, and there's a subtitle to it which says, Essential Steps to More Passionate, Intimate Lovemaking. So Now, tell us why couples have to recommit themselves to the emotional and physical connection they have that they have when they're first in a relationship with one another.
Well, you might have had this experience. Many of you might have had the experience. I know I've had the experience. When you first fall in love, there are many chemicals that are operating in your body. Of course, I think most people have heard of pheromones. You also have dopamine that gets developed, norepinephrine, and another chemical called PEA. And those chemicals are a very potent mix. We call it love potion number 9. And that mixture really produces, like any other drug, it's actually a hormonal drugs that get pumped into our body. And like any other drugs, we develop a high from that. So we develop a euphoric state. Our defenses are lowered, and we are just happy. And that's why sometimes when you're first in love and you have to be apart for a period of time, you become lovesick. And that's actually a withdrawal from the drug. The other person is actually your drug. So it's just lovely. I mean, it's such a wonderful time, the romantic stage of love. But like any drug, it begins to wear off. Over time, we develop a tolerance for it. And as we develop the tolerance for it, the chemicals subside and the sense of euphoria subsides. Also, during the drug phase, our desire level is elevated because the drugs sort of elevate that. And so sometimes the desire level wears off also, particularly for a person who tends to have a lower desire level, their desire level goes back to quote-unquote normal. And when that begins to wear off, sometimes we make up that we're out of love with each other or the other person isn't interested in us anymore. But actually, it's a natural stage of development. And it's during that time that is very crucial for couples to not give up and to begin communicating with each other and to begin having some intention in their relationship about keeping the feelings alive. And there are several different ways to do that.
It's really interesting to me. And first, let me just say that the number at which to reach us today is 649-9737, 649-9737. If you'd like to speak to Karen about these issues, please feel free to call us today. It's interesting to me because we've done a couple of shows where we are talking about brain chemistry when we would like to think it's so many different things, and here it's just brain chemistry, all those wonderful feelings. Yet we are connecting also. We're getting to know each other. It's not like it's just an illusion, and I understand that. So these feelings kind of wear off, and people are stunned. And they might tell themselves, make it up in their mind that they're no longer in love. So how do you help them to recommit themselves to doing the work of connection?
Well, first of all, Gail, you're right that people, even though you're in the quote-unquote romantic stage of love, you're still connecting because it's sort of like nature is giving you this time to connect. And so you're bonding. So the romantic stage is the glue that keeps you together later, even when some of the feelings were off. And that's why sometimes I tell couples, you know, what was it like when you first met each other, and get them to recall that and remember them. Because every time you're bonding, you're also creating other chemicals in your body that have well-being feelings, and that helps as well. But helping couples to stay connected after the romantic stage wears off is, first of all, it's somewhat easy in a sense. It's not always easy, but the easy answer is education. And I think sometimes just knowing that this is going to happen helps couples, and begin educating them to what are the different factors that can help maintain your relationship. And there's so many different factors, but one of the main things is developing the sense of intimacy. And intimacy is, as you know, is simply sharing your innermost thoughts and feelings with the other person. And it's the other person who really knows you well, knows your background, knows your likes and dislikes, knows what color you like, what foods you like, and is interested to know what your day was like, and vice versa. And so the intimacy is very important in maintaining it, because without that, you can continue to have a sexual relationship, but it's purely a sexual relationship. It's not the intimacy relationship that we want. And the other large factor is communication. You know, we want people to think that we just will automatically know what they want and need, and we want our partners to just know. We want them to be clairvoyant, but that's not true. So we need to learn to really listen to the other person and have the other person listen to us, and to really have that bridge of communication between two different realities. And the other thing that's really, there's so many factors that are important, but another one that comes to mind is romance. You know, romance doesn't just happen. Sometimes, you know, as much as we'd like it to be spontaneous, we sort of have to plan for it.
Yes. Oh, yes, that is true. Mm-hmm. You talk about communication, and it reminds me of when I was dating my husband. He would come home from work, and he would draw little pictures of a heart, because he's a heart doctor, and he would draw little pictures of a heart, and he'd put faces on them, and he'd show me all the things that, you know, what case he worked on that day. And then about 4 years into our marriage, I remember asking him what he had done that day, and he said, you know, something short, you know, some short answer. And I said, well, you know, what was wrong with the baby? And he said, his heart didn't work well. And I thought, okay, I think we've moved away from, because to me, sharing the intimacy of fixing this child's heart felt like the most romantic thing in the entire world. And of course, we've moved along in all of that now, because we've been married a long time. But I think about keeping that communication. What did you do today? What did it look like? Help me to be with you at work so I can sense what your day was like. That takes a commitment. That doesn't just happen.
Right. And especially sometimes we don't feel like talking about what we did all day because we're tired and we're exhausted. And so sometimes we need a little break, but then to take the time to really do it, because you're right. I mean, so many of our hours, if we're both working and or busy doing other things, we really don't have the time to connect with each other.
So, you know, you talked a little bit before about desire and that there's a divergence of desire from one partner to the other. And talk a little bit more about that, and then tell me how you help them to navigate this divergence. But first, I just want to repeat that the number at which to reach us today, Mental Health Matters, my guest is Karen Olshansky, and she's speaking about maintaining emotional and physical connection in relationships. And she's talking about a body of work written by Pat Love called Hot Monogamy. And the number at which to reach us today is 649-9737. So go ahead and help us with that.
Well, basically, desire level is based on a lot of things, but one of the main components of desire level is actually physical. And it depends on the amount of testosterone one has in their body. We call it T level.
Do women have testosterone too?
Women have testosterone as well. It's in a different form called androgen, but women have testosterone as well. Some people naturally have higher testosterone levels than others. And often what happens, as I mentioned before, in the romantic stage of love, a person with lower testosterone has an elevated testosterone level based on the drugs. But then after the romantic stage wears off, the testosterone level drops back to quote-unquote normal. But the person with the high testosterone level remains high. And so what develops during that time is what we call a desire level discrepancy. During the romantic stage, the person with the low testosterone level experiences it elevated and says, wow, this person is great. I never felt so sexual as with this person. And the person with the high testosterone level says, wow, I finally found somebody who can meet me sexually. But then the disappointment comes in when the low person goes back to normal, and there's a discrepancy there. And it happens in most, all, not every relationship, but most relationships, because there tends to be one high and one low T. I don't exactly know why that happens. Opposites attract. There are many reasons for it, but it does.
Can I reiterate that?
Yes.
I think it is such an important point, again, because people come into therapy with me all the time with this issue. And what you're saying is this is ubiquitous to almost every single couple, some high, some low, and it's not always men high, women low. I mean, it's a mixture of both, but it's just so important, I think, to reiterate that people should not pathologize their partner's level of interest and desire.
That's exactly right. I'm so glad you said that. And that is, I think, just when people know this, when I've been with couples and they just have the information, there's a huge relief. Because, you know, we call each other names sometimes. You know, think of the names that, high testosterone level people are called, and the names that low level testosterone people are called. You know, women can be called frigid, men can be called sex maniacs. And it's simply, most often, a sense of biology.
So how do you help them to navigate this divergence? Okay, you tell them that, but there's got to be more. At the end of the day, they'd like it fixed.
Yeah. Well, I think part of it is, as you said, knowing it and having the information. But there's also several tips that you can do. And I'll just give you a few examples. You know, there's more. But for an example, if you're a partner with a high testosterone level, you may try to initiate sex often. Maybe even sometimes when you don't want to have sex, because it's called deprivation theory. You think if you ask often enough, you're liable to hit the. If you ask 10 times, maybe you'll hit the jackpot once or twice, and that sometimes can feel to the other person, very difficult. So one tip is to every time you want to have sex, ask for it. But be direct about it, number one. But don't ask for it when you don't want it. For example, for a low testosterone woman or man, if your partner is wanting sex or initiating sex and you really don't want to, you have the right, obviously, to say no. But say when. Give an alternative. If you can't say when, say what else you can offer. You know, a hug or a cuddle, or, you know what, let's spend some time together, let's go to a movie, let's talk. So offer some alternative. Those are just some examples, but there are other examples as well.
Or you might say to them, you know what, tomorrow I'll try to get my chores done more quickly, or I'll leave the dishes in the sink and I'll have a little more energy. You know, I will be mindful to make connection with you tomorrow night.
Yeah.
That's a good suggestion. That's a lot of work, and it is easier said than done. Mm-hmm. And what I think sometimes is that the person who's being asked over and over and over again begins to feel like that is the only thing that that individual is worth, and it begins to really tear at their sense of self and their sense of connection and love with their partner. Mm-hmm. So, okay, again, beginning to go ahead and educate people, I get that. That's mm-hmm. really helpful. How do you really get them to listen to each other and really get them to negotiate this desire divergence? That, you know, those are good tips. How do you get them to actually use them? And what are some more tips?
Well, that's a lot of information. But listening to each other, again, I mentioned the communication skills. First of all, no one is going to listen to the other person unless they're motivated to do so. So I think there has to be a certain amount of motivation and love and willingness on both parties to really be able to do it, because sometimes, you know, that can't happen. But of course, having the communication skills to really listen to each other and the motivation to do so is really important, because communicating in general is very important, but communicating about sex is very important as well. And the goal is to begin to have the concept of working as a team about this. Working as a team is really important. And I think that one of the things that that is not understood is that for a high T person, often the way to intimacy and closeness is to start with a physical relationship first, and that gets a person to feel close. For a low T person, they might need the prerequisite of feeling close and having the connection to get there. So meeting somewhere in the middle around that is very important. And so really coaching couples to do that.
So where, and let me just say that the number at which to reach us today is 649-9737, 649-9737. You're listening to Mental Health Matters, and my guest today is Karen Olshansky. So Karen, let me understand what you're saying. So if your husband is a high T-level person and you wanted to make connection, that perhaps the day before you might, steal a kiss, rub a back, tousle hair, let them know you're there and you're there for them physically, where the if you were a low T-level person, maybe you would know that your spouse likes to talk about something in particular, or you might tell them they look nice, or dinner was good, or thank you for making it. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think it was Kathleen Parker in an editorial once described that the best foreplay she ever heard about is her husband reaching under the sink and taking out the garbage. But I think to know what your partner's if you're a low T woman, if you have a partner who, or a man, if you have a partner who's low T, you want to know, what are the prerequisites? Well, I need to talk first. I need us to take a bath first. I need to feel rested. I think another thing that's not appreciated is for a high T person, how much tension and how much discomfort is involved in not having sex. For a low T person, how much energy it takes to have sex. So getting enough rest is really important, and being able to say to your partner, you know what, I need to make love in the morning when I'm more rested, and have your partner honor that is very important.
You know, this is so important, what you just said, which is that what it feels like to not have your needs met. So somebody who has a high T level, it really begins to feel just exhausting to have to manage the lack of sex in their lives. And then it becomes exhausting for a low T level person if they're constantly having to perform sexually, so to speak. And that takes a lot out of them. And then it is so important not, again, to use this word, pathologize what's going on with your partner, enjoying physical connection doesn't make you a bad person. And right. I've heard some things that people have said to each other over not wanting to be sexual that just really makes my hair stand up. So it's important not to pathologize it.
Yes, absolutely.
But what if you have a client who has like no drive at all, and can it be a bigger issue? And then how do you address that?
Well, yes. I mean, it could be a bigger issue. I mean, it could be a hormonal deficiency, in which case I would refer to a physician. It could be a medication that someone's taken. It could be early childhood trauma. It could be the way one was raised to repress sexual feelings. It could be that you're sick that day. It could be any number of things. There are tons of medications that can interfere, stress. For some people under stress, the first thing they want to do is have sex because it relieves the stress. For other people who have low T levels, stress really depletes their desire level.
It's interesting. It's like food. When I'm very stressed out, I have no appetite, where so many people I know, when they're stressed out, they have double the appetite.
Exactly.
It is interesting. That is very interesting.
Exactly.
So perhaps it's important, if a couple is struggling with this, that maybe they check out all those things first. You know, what medications are you on? Talk to a doctor. Look at your, you know, think about how you've been raised. Think about whether or not you have some early childhood trauma and you need to manage it. Those are all really important things.
Yeah.
And then what if it's the opposite? You have a person who cannot discharge their sexual energy no matter how much sex they have. I mean, have you come across some people who you think might really be sexually addicted? And then do you just go ahead and refer them to deal with that first?
Yeah, I mean, I think we continue to work together in some cases, but definitely there can be times that the desire and the motivation to have sex can take on a sort of compulsive quality. And it could be an addiction problem. It could be that there's not enough other things in that person's life, or the person is not used to expressing feelings or needs. And so this is particular. It's interesting. I think this could be true of either men or women, but I think in particular for men, a lot of men, and some women, I must say, are raised to not have any needs, mm-hmm. not say where their needs are. And for men, they've been socialized often to, it's okay to ask for sex. That's one of the only needs that sometimes are okay to ask for. And so sometimes, and that's another tip for high T folks, is to say, is the need really for sex, or is it something else?
So in effect, somebody who only learns to ask for sex may not be getting any of their other, like, intimacy needs met.
Exactly. To really think, what is it that I need right now? And so, you know, that's part of the work a couple can do together, is what is it I'm really needing right now?
So let me just reiterate one more thing, because I think this is important for any men who are listening. If you and your wife have been having some divergence in the issue of intimacy, perhaps a good thing to do tonight would be to go home and take out the garbage.
Right.
I like that.
Right. Well, it might be, but it's different for everybody. You know, romance is different for everyone. So I think I told you, Gail, ask your husband, you know, what does romance mean to him, or what, you know, would that mean to him? And for it's different for everybody. And
well, you know, I'm planning on asking my husband that on our ride to Virginia Beach on Thursday evening, and I hope he's listening so he can prepare the answer. So how did you learn to do this work? We only have a minute left. Just quickly say how you learned to do this work. I know you're a certified Imago therapist. Actually, I'm asking you this question. I'm not going to let you answer it because I have to move on. But if you would like to be in contact with Karen, you're welcome to email me. I will funnel whatever thoughts and questions you have to her. If you would need a therapist, she is happy to help you work that through and find another certified Imago therapist who has the skills in hot monogamy to help you guys. So please let me know. I want to say that next week on Mental Health Matters, we will revisit the topic of step families. Many, many of you sent me follow-up questions, and I'm going to, when Debbie Glazer was on and she was talking about step-parenting. So if you have any questions about the subject of step-families, please email them to me, and I'll hope I'll have time to address them. Karen, this has been a provocative and informative show, and I am grateful for your time and hope that you will join me again.
You're welcome.
Thank you all for listening to Mental Health Matters today. I'm your host, Gail Moskowitz. Please tune in again next Monday at 1 p.m.
Be happy. In every life we have some trouble, but when you worry you make it double. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy now. Don't worry.